first take your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. Technology willing, we will start you with the headlines you need to know. Yep, looks like we've got them up here. Okay. NASCAR star Kyle Larson, we knew yesterday, had been suspended. Well, now he's been fired Tuesday by Chip Ganassi Racing, which absolutely continues his downfall. 27-year-old Larson, used a racial slur during a live stream, virtual race for NASCAR, watched by nearly a million people. And at this point, he's now lost virtually all of his sponsorship, rightfully so. He's come out and apologized for it, but it's too little too late as the fallout continues for him for what he did. Speaking of fallout, Cincinnati has dropped men's soccer. At this point, there's no longer going to be a men's soccer program for the University of Cincinnati amid the widespread uncertainty of the coronavirus pandemic. So the school is going to go ahead and eliminate men's soccer. They've been competing in men's soccer since 1973. They made the NCAA tournament in 2003 and 2006. They were 5-11-1 in 2019. So at this point, no more men's soccer at University of Cincinnati. And we end our headlines with the sad news. Yankees co-owner Hank Steinbrenner has died at the age of 63 after a lengthy illness. Remember, he was the son of George Steinbrenner and the co-owner of the Yankees. He died in Florida. At this point, there's no indication that that death had anything to do with COVID-19. It was a long-standing health issue, but a sad day for the Steinbrenner family and the Yankees as an organization as co-owner Hank Steinbrenner dies at the age of 63. It's First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And if you've been listening to the show, we're taking some of your draft experience. I want to know how you're going to celebrate the draft. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. You can tweet me. You can also call the show. Tell us how you're going to be watching it. Raider Tom on Twitter says the local ESPN affiliate is doing a virtual draft party this year. So I'll don all my Raiders gear and hope for the best. So as you continue to look at it, it's interesting to see how we will be celebrating it. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Tell me how you're going to experience the virtual draft. In the meantime, every day they've been taking a look at different divisions and different teams as part of the QB Continued series on First Take. So today they took a look specifically at the AFC East, and they're looking not just at the division and the teams, but at a couple of specific quarterbacks. Ryan Clark joined Max and Stephen A. to have the conversation about which of the quarterbacks will be the best in a Tom Brady-less AFC East.
Believe it or not, I think it's going to be Josh Allen of the Buffalo Bills. And hear me out here, my thinking. First of all, let's understand something. The Buffalo Bills are exceptionally well coached. Sean McDermott can coach. I think he's proven that. That's number one. Number two, this defense is real. They were number two overall. They were number three in yards allowed. They were number four against the pass. With Levi White and Tre'Davious and those boys, I just think that they've got a secondary that is big time. You got this kid, Jordan Phillips, and Shaq Lawson, who can help get to the quarterback. You got to give credit where credit is due in terms of what we saw from that defense. And then you think about the elevation of Josh Allen himself. I think his coming out party to some degree was against the Dallas Cowboys on Thanksgiving. They made my turkey. They made my turkey day because I watched this kid get unleashed by McDermott in terms of running the football, using his legs in order to pull that off. I think that will make him more of a threat more effectively. I think the Lamar Jackson effect has contaminated and will contaminate a lot of quarterbacks in the National Football League. I think you'll see them running a little bit more. We saw Mitchell Trubisky running the football a little bit more in the second half of the season, which I thought helped him a little bit. I think the same can be said for Josh Allen. I think the fact that you've acquired Stephon Diggs from the Minnesota Vikings, that's an additional weapon, you know, because you had John Brown there, obviously. Devin Singletary, I like him a lot. I think they're a better team with him in the backfield, even though it was mad respect to Frank Gore and his, you know, his career. But in the end, with Tom Brady out, I got Jarrett Stidham. I don't know who the hell's going to be the dude in Miami, okay? And the New York Jets, I don't want to get into Gason. I don't want to do that to you, Ryan Clark. I'll leave that alone. But am I supposed to believe, as much as I like Sam Darnold, as much as I like Sam Darnold, am I supposed to believe, fellas, in the Jets' second worst offense in points, absolute worst in yards accumulated, second worst running attack? All of a sudden, the draft is going to change your fortunes. There's no knock against Sam Darnold, but I think he's surrounded by a tough situation that Joe Douglas and Adam Gase is going to have to fix. I think Josh Allen is in the best situation to succeed for this upcoming season, because that's all I'm talking about. This upcoming season, I think he will emerge as the best quarterback in the AFC East.
Well, the Bills certainly seemed to figure some stuff out with him in the second half of last season. He got more consistent, and that's great, and I agree with you. Raw talent, Stephen A., Josh Allen is the guy. But it's not just about raw talent in the NFL. A lot of it, it's not just, you know, when we talk about the draft, not just drafting, it's drafting and development. And I trust whoever the signal caller is for the Patriots, the New England Patriots, more than I do whoever the quarterback is for the Bills or the Jets or the Dolphins, for that matter. I don't think Stidham has a job with Bill Belichick just because. He's pretty good. You know, you draft a guy in the second round if you're Belichick. By the way, you draft a quarterback, period. It's because you think he can play, and more importantly, that he can play for you. That there are things that you can do with him that lead to wins, playoff appearances, advancing in the playoffs. Stidham didn't just, you know, he's not a rookie. He's been holding the clipboard for a guy who's pretty good for a little while. And he's the last man standing now. I understand Garoppolo, they forced his way out of town, and Brissett seemed like a choice by Belichick, but he's the guy who they then drafted and developed and will be taking over for a team. And right now, you'll say they're bereft of weapons. They're devoid of any kind of offensive this and that and blah, blah, blah. And I have a feeling we'll look up at a certain point and go, damn, Patriots about to win double digits. And Stidham will be the quarterback who I believe surprises people, Stephen A. And if it's not Stidham, because they pull a deal for a veteran quarterback, then there'd be a good reason for that, too. Whoever it is, I believe the Patriots will have the best quarterback in the AFC East.
You know, it's crazy. Coming on here, and I was all ready to start my statement the exact way that Max did it. And the longer Max talked, the more he talked me out of believing that statement. Coming on, I was like, man, there is no way I'm going to say that Josh Allen is going to be the best quarterback. And as soon as Max said that, I was like, dang it, Max took my thing. I was going to go with whoever the Patriots quarterback was, because I thought for sure it wasn't going to be Jared Stidham. I knew that Bill Belichick had to have some type of trick up his sleeve to get someone else after the draft. But if we're going with Jared Stidham, there's no way I stay there. And the more Max talked, I thought to myself, wait, he's speaking about Tom Brady. I know that Max thought that Tom Brady fell through the valley or the ditch or the mountain or whatever it was
ravine.
He fell
from. Well, it was a cliff. But the last time, it was a cliff and then
a ravine.
A ravine. Yes.
There it is, the ravine. But I remember the greatest quarterback of all time playing for the New England Patriots last year, especially down the stretch of the season. I don't know if that guy was the best quarterback in the AFC East. If you look down the stretch of the season, it was probably Josh Allen, especially when he ran the football. And now you look at Josh Allen having Stephon Diggs and what they gave up to get him, because they know he's a true number one receiver. He's going to draw the matchups that you want to see out of your guy on the outside. Now Cole Beasley opens up. We saw what John Brown was able to do last year. And Singletary is the star who you draft in the mid rounds of last year's draft. I think Josh Allen can take the next step. If we can get some of the accuracy downfield, which people have been waiting on him to gain, or waiting on him to learn, or waiting on him to be taught, I think Josh Allen takes that next step into being a quarterback who we talk about with the Lamar Jacksons, and hoping that Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold get to that point. Right now, he's the second best quarterback of that class, and I expect him to continue getting better. I'm not a fan of Josh Allen. I never was, but I have seen his progression, and this is kind of just picking who's going to be the best of the dudes who aren't really great in the AFC East.
First, take your take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. I love what Ryan Clark just said there. It's going to be, you know, really about who's the best of maybe not the greatest quarterbacks. Well, we're going to take a look at it. What we like to do on the QB Continued series is go one step deeper. So we're going to do it since they're debating which quarterback in the AFC East is poised to be the best. We're going to do it with a couple of different guys over the next few minutes. So we'll start with ESPN Jets reporter Rich Cimini joining us. Rich, thanks so much for the time. I hope you're staying safe. Always appreciate it when you come on with us. So when you look at Sam Darnold, what is your realistic expectation for him going into next year?
Well, I think the arrow is still pointing up for Sam. He had the unfortunate situation last year coming down with mono early in the year. He missed three games, but assuming he stays healthy, I still think, and I know the Jets still like how high his ceiling is. He didn't make great strides this year. I think he made marginal improvements, but they got to get a better cast around him. Right now, their receiving core is in shambles, and their offensive line, while better than it was last year, still has a ways to go. So Sam's future is going to be tied to how well Joe Douglas rebuilds this roster on offense.
Well, and Rich, you make a great point about the lack of weapons, and we don't really know how they're going to address that other than the draft. So do you expect them to look at wide receiver with the early draft pick?
I do, but if I were a betting man right now, I'd say there's probably a 75% chance they're going to pick an offensive tackle with the 11th pick. It's still an area of need. They did end up signing four free agents on the offensive line, and yet they still need a tackle, which shows you, you know, how bad the line was last year. So they have George Fant they got from Seattle at left tackle right now. He's a marginal starter. And they have a right tackle, Chuma Adoga, a third-round pick last year, who had a kind of a down rookie year. So they're definitely looking for a tackle. If all four of the top tackles are gone, then I think they would go wide receiver. But it's a deep draft for receivers. I think the Jets, like a lot of teams, feel confident that they could get a really good one in the second or third round.
So, Rich, so much of the quarterback development in general is made about the relationship with the head coach. So now that you've had some time and you've spent so much time around Adam Gase, what's your assessment of his ability to develop a quarterback to the highest level?
Well, we haven't seen it yet. So, I mean, he was with Peyton Manning, but we all know he didn't develop Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning developed himself, and it was toward the end of his career when he got to Adam at Denver. And, in Miami, he had Ryan Tannehill, who, you know, look, he missed half the time under Gase in Miami with injuries. So I don't think you could blame his lack of development in Miami on Adam Gase. You saw what a healthy Tannehill could do last year. I mean, he had a phenomenal year for Tennessee. So we haven't really seen Adam develop a young quarterback like Sam. It's his first chance really to get with a young quarterback. And I think they have a good relationship. I know Adam, that is his primary focus, is trying to make Sam better. And, you know, look, like I said earlier, I mean, there were marginal improvements in Sam's game last year, but I still think he needs to be more consistent on a down-to-down basis. Still throws a couple of head-scratching interceptions, and I think they got to try to clean that up. But I do think you saw some improvements later in the year. He ended up going 7-6 as a starter last year. So, you know, something to build around. But I think they have a good relationship, but they need to – it has to flourish this year. This is a big year for both of them.
We're talking to ESPN Jets reporter Rich Cimini. I'm First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio. I'm Jason Fitz. So, Rich, looking at – I like to play the benefit of the doubt game, where we give everybody in the division the benefit of the doubt that they do well in the draft. So if we give everybody that moving forward, where do the Jets sit in the division when it's all said and done next year in your mind?
Well, they're not among the two best teams. I think Buffalo's the team to beat on paper, and I'm not ready to write off New England, although they're going to step down a few notches. But I still think it'll be the Jets and the Dolphins battling for third place. I mean, Miami brought in some good players in free agency. The Jets brought in more, you know, Bill, I'm going to use a Bill Parcells-ism here. He used to call them hold the fort players. So, you know, the Jets brought in a bunch of those guys. And so I probably give the Jets third place right now because the Jets know who their quarterback is. You know, I have a young guy, a developing guy in Darnold, whereas Miami, they're probably going to draft one, so we don't know how that's going to play out, or whether they'll go with the young guy or Ryan Fitzpatrick. So I'd probably say the Jets are the third-best team in the division, and they're still a couple of notches below the Buffalo Bills. I think the Bills are just better right now.
You can follow him on Twitter, at Rich Cimini. Rich, we appreciate your time. Stay safe and stay healthy, my friend. Thanks for joining us.
Same to you guys. Thanks.
It's First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio. I'm Jason Fitz. So that's a little bit of the Jets side of it, and what we're going to do now is we're going to flip the page and get a little bit of the Bills side of it. So we'll stay with an expert that can help us break it all down. ESPN Bills reporter Marcel Louis Jacques joins us. Marcel, thanks for the time. Again, hope you're staying safe. That's number one for everybody, but put that aside, and let's talk a little football for a second. So you know, the debate on First Take today was which of these young quarterbacks will now be the best in the AFC. Where do you assess Josh Allen in that conversation?
I think it kind of depends. If he can develop from year two to year three the way he did in year one to year two, then I believe he is a second tier quarterback in the division or in the conference. If that first tier is the, you know, Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, Lamar Jacksons of the league, I don't think he's quite there yet, but he is just one step below. This is a guy with plus athleticism for the position, arguably the strongest arm in the league, and for the first time in his career, a very good supporting cast. He's got one of the better wide receiver trios in the league, certainly the best he's had since he's entered it. All it takes is him shoring up that deep ball, which he struggled with in 2019, tightening up a little bit of his decision making. You see him often try to do a little too much with the football, and you know, coaches will say, he'll say that's just his competitive side. But the fact of the matter is, when you are the quarterback of a team, when you're the leader of a team, and so much of the outcome of a game falls on your decision making, you've got to learn when to let that competitive spirit kind of take a step back and make the smart play. So if he can continue to develop like he did last season, then yeah, I think he's one of the top tier two guys in the AFC.
There are some quarterbacks, Marcel, that I think galvanized for whatever reason. And the fan base has really galvanized behind Josh Allen with the concept that the national media particularly is too rough on him. They don't understand him and that they're not assessing him correctly. So he's been able to sort of live in a bubble protected by the fan base. But you just mentioned the weapons, which this year are staggeringly good in my mind offensively. So is there a point now where the level of expectation becomes higher from the fans that have been so vocal in supporting it?
Yeah, one of the first things I wrote about after the trade was that this opens the Super Bowl window, first of all, and it also closes the excuses for Josh Allen. You can't say he's throwing to Calvin Benjamin and Zay Jones anymore. You can't say he doesn't have an offensive line. You can't say it's not a good system. He's had the same coordinator for 3 years. He's had the same offensive line. Now it's going to be for 2 years in a row. And like you said, a very good supporting cast at all levels. I mean, at receiver, at tight end, and at running back. So there's no more. Everything now falls on Josh Allen's right arm and what's going on inside of his head. Everything revolves around the quarterback at this point. You can't say that he's lacking in any support from the team. I think that GM Brandon Bean has done a superb job over the past two seasons in alleviating life for Josh Allen. I think throwing him in 2018, Brandon Bean's even admit that, you know, Josh wasn't supposed to play that soon, and he didn't have the proper cast around him that early in his career, but it built a little character, and now there's really not a lot of reason for him not to have a career season in 2020.
Some years, Marcel, feel like everything goes right, everything breaks right, and I would make the argument last year that the Bills and Titans were two teams that, frankly, played very well and just most people didn't watch, so I'm not sure there were enough educated opinions on what we saw from those teams particularly. So you, having been around the Bills so much, when you look at what they did last year, how sustainable is it in your mind moving forward?
Well, the thing, and Bills fans might eat me alive if they're hearing this right now, but the thing you really do have to remember about last season is if you look at the 2020 draft and that top 10, I believe the Bills played at least six of those teams picking in the top 10. It was an incredibly easy schedule, and they did what a good team is supposed to do with a schedule like that. this is when kind of the boys turn into men here. This is when, okay, you've got a young team that are young in the sense of their window as a contender. You've got a young team here that wants to prove itself. This is how you do it. When you've got to play Patrick Mahomes at home, you've got to play the Seahawks, you've got to play the 49ers, you've got to play the Titans and the Steelers. If you can still come out of that kind of schedule, 10-6, then you're going to get this country's attention. I think TV networks started to notice last season that, okay, the Bills, you put the Bills on primetime, you put them on Sunday Night Football, people are going to tune in and watch. You put them on Thanksgiving, people are going to tune in and watch. So if they perform here, I think they'll get the country's attention, they'll get the country's respect. But, you know, I it is sustainable because I'm a very firm believer that defense still wins championships, and they do have one of the best, the top three defense in each of the past two seasons. That part of the ball got better. A pedestrian offense got a heck of a lot better. So, you know, on paper, yeah, they should be able to replicate last year's results. But last year was a little bit of an anomaly just based on how easy that competition was.
Well, it's great stuff. And by the way, I mean, the Bills fan base is passionate. They're going to rip all of us for everything. We know that, but that's part of the joy. It's part of the joy of it, my friend. Thanks for joining us. Follow him on Twitter at Marcel_LJ. Marcel Louis Jacques, thank you so much for your time, man. Stay safe. We appreciate you coming on with us.
Yeah, stay safe as well. Thanks for having me on.
And look, I think that there's a discovery that's going to happen because the Bills last year didn't get enough shine by the end of the year. Not enough people were really paying attention to some of the things that made that football team great. I don't think that that happens this year. Right from the gate, the people are going to be watching. People are going to be paying attention. The most interesting part of it to me is I'm not sure that we can say Josh Allen lives in a bubble anymore. There's going to be a lot of pressure on him. So how he reacts to that is going to be huge. ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive's Home Quote Explorer gives you multiple quote options so you can pick what's right for you. See for yourself at progressive.com. We'll keep taking your take. What's your draft experience going to be like? 888 say ESPN 888-729-3776. How are you going to watch the NFL draft? Plus, Kyle Larson has been fired by Chip Ganassi Racing after using a racial slur. First Take reacted. You'll hear that next. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. I'm Jason Fitz. What's your draft experience going to be like? Y'all know. Man, I live, eat, and breathe the draft. I mean, it's everything to me. If I had the opportunity for the rest of my life to cover either the draft or the Super Bowl, I would take the draft every single year, and I would take it without question. What I've been able to do the last couple of years with ESPN around the draft is the stuff I'm proudest of. It's an event that I get so hyped for because it's a moment, it's a weekend of hope. Everybody feels like you're getting better. And when you watch it, you have this celebration with every single pick. So how are you going to watch the draft? How are you going to experience it with your buddies? What are you going to do to soak in the draft? I want you guys to stack it up. We'll take some calls on a 888-SAY-ESPN. 888-729-3776. You can also tweet me at Jason Fitz. We'll get some of your take, but let's start with some Straight Talk brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And that's from one of the biggest stories of the day. We know today at this point that Kyle Larson, the NASCAR driver, has been fired by Ganassi Racing for his use of a racial slur during a virtual virtual race that was taking place over the weekend. He's come out. He's apologized for what he said, but it doesn't make a difference, rightfully so, in the minds of many, myself included, to his future employment. So Stephen A. today on First Take reacted to Kyle Larson and what this means.
I'm not shocked. We live in a different time. And the reality of the situation is that anybody associated with NASCAR, there should definitely be a heightened level of sensitivity. If somebody's going to apologize and engage in a level of contrition that Larson seems to have engaged in, you take him at his word, recognizing the fact that, you know, he made an error, and you take it from there. But that's not going to stop the sponsors and the advertisers from jumping ship, his car racing team from jumping ship with him or whatever. You got to take into account, again, the history of NASCAR. You know, you had in the first 65 years of its existence, you know, you had one full-time minority driver named Wendell Scott. Okay, and obviously he was denied the opportunity to celebrate because at Victory Lane that he was going to be seen kissing a white woman. At least that's what the story says. You know, you have other things pointing to the history of NASCAR where there's been an absence of minority participation in the sport, and it's been something that they've been trying to overcome for years, to know what kind of history they have where they proudly once upon a time locked arms with former governor in Alabama, Wallace, Mr. George Wallace, if I remember correctly, along with others. You just take into account all of those things from an historical perspective and how their history is, and you highlight those things. Certainly if one of their drivers is caught spewing the N-word and engaging in the kind of behavior that Kyle Lawson had engaged in at that particular moment in time, there are going to be repercussions. I believe, you know, this country is the land of second chances. I believe that when somebody makes a mistake that they apologize, you should give them another chance and what have you. It's unfortunate that the fallout from this has been what it has been, because he's now been fired. But the bottom line is, I could hardly say that it is a surprise, because with the heightened level of sensitivity that involves this particular issue as it pertains specifically to the sport of NASCAR racing, I'm not surprised at all that this transpired.
And this from a guy who is, you know, on a diversity group in NASCAR, because he's part Japanese and has started to embrace that. Look, the N-word, especially with a hard R, Stephen, I know you'd say, hey, look, I'm not making a distinction. If you're not black, you shouldn't be using that word, period. You shouldn't be using that word, period. But particularly, obviously, the sanctions are against people who are not African-American. Whether it's with a hard R, meaning used in a racist way, or with an A, which is colloquial and spread largely through hip hop and popular culture and music to mean something, to mean guy or dude. You're not trying to hear it. I get that. In this case, it was bizarre because if you listen to the audio, it was with a hard R and yet kind of meant to mean dude. So now non-black groups are appropriating the word and also changing it back. And so is it meant as a racist slur, or is it meant to you know, it's confusing. But the point is, it is the strongest word in the English language, and there are severe social sanctions against it.
First Take, your take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. We're asking you guys, and by the way, that was some Straight Talk Wireless, everything for less, only at Walmart. We're asking you to chime in. What's your NFL draft experience going to be like? How are you going to watch it? How are you going to celebrate it? What are you going to do to sort of live in the moment of it? You can tweet me at Jason Fitch. You can also call 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. You know, Joey says, will do like always, wait till it's over and check Google. Okay, fine. You're cool. Whatever. This is for the people that love it and love it and love celebrating it. Cody says, I'm thinking you need to host a Zoom call with listeners, mute everyone's auto and audio and open up the chat feature. I'm not saying no to that. I'm not saying no to that. It's a pretty good idea. Spencer in Missouri, what's your take? How are you going to experience the NFL draft?
Hey, Jason, love the show. I'm going to be opening up on as many browsers, and, you know, I'm going to be tuned in your feed, probably Mina's feed, Gojo's, Field Yates, Dominique for sure. Definitely Lou Riddick. I really wish you all were able to get together and do a stream of the draft again like last year. And one more thing real quick. My last name is actually Larson. I have no relation to Kyle Larson, but I just wanted to speak on behalf of all the other Larsons out there. We absolutely ban that word. Kyle does not speak for the rest of us. That was horrible, and he is no longer a Larson in my book. Thank you.
No, thanks for your take on it. And look, you're not wrong. And we still don't know. We're trying to work out the devil's in the details. There's still a tiny glimmer of hope that Mina and Field and Dominique and Gojo and I can come together and give you some draft content. We don't know if that's going to be able to happen because of the pandemic and sort of some of the things that have been shifting, but we're doing everything we can. And if we can't do that, I'm going to find some creative ways to at least engage with everybody as best as I can throughout the process of the draft. David in Dallas, how are you going to experience the draft? Come on, David, we got you.
Hey, what's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. How are you going to experience the draft?
Yeah, man. So I'm just going to do kind of, I think what everyone else is going to do is just kind of do Zoom webinar. I've got a lot of friends and whatnot and family in the DFW Metroplex, but a lot of different team cheering for and, you know, just drink some beers and hopefully enjoy the draft like everyone else is.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. I mean, thanks for your take on it. I think a lot of people are going to be trying to find some way to Zoom with each other and still sort of experience it. Justin in Pittsburgh, what's your take? How are you going to experience the NFL draft?
So, me, like most Pittsburghers, realize that the Steelers do not actually have a first-round pick in this draft. They have their first pick is the 49th overall pick. So, we're going to be very interested in day two as opposed to day one. And Mel Kiper has us all hyped up for some reason that the Steelers are going to pick Jalen Hurts with their first overall pick in the draft, which is complete nonsense. But you're going to get a spike in ratings in ABC because of Mel Kiper thinking that the Steelers have a chance to draft a quarterback with their first overall pick for some reason.
Well, Justin, thanks for your take on it. I mean, most mock drafts still have Jalen Hurts available in the second round. So, you know, the question is, will the Steelers be looking at quarterback? I mean, that seems like a bit of a stretch, but most draft analysis that you see out there, in fact, as much as we keep seeing articles that want to make Jalen Hurts a first-round pick, some of our draft simulators that they've built here at ESPN as of last week had him going in the third round. So I'm not sure where we are on Jalen Hurts, the quarterback. I've talked to some of the analysts we have for the network. They seem still split on him. There are some good comps, some bad comps for him. I don't think most people think he's going to step in and be a day one epic starter. So I'm not sure kind of what the future is for him, but I will say this. I wouldn't be surprised. He'll be there when the Steelers pick. The question is, will they actually go quarterback? It seems like a stretch to me. Charles, in Ohio, what do you got? How are you going to be experiencing the NFL draft?
My son and I are just going to hang out. We're going to go to a local place here in our community and get some wings and things of that sort and watch the draft together. He's a big Browns fan, so he's hoping that they get like an offensive tackle to help like shore up the offensive line because he feels like that's probably the biggest thing that the Browns need. I'm also thinking about, this is kind of crazy, they have the brand new football cards out this year with the draft picks and stuff. So I'm thinking about just buying a box of cards with him, and I'll open up cards as well as we're watching the draft because I think I'd be fun.
Oh, that's a cool idea. Charles, that's a really cool idea. I love it. Thanks for your take on it. And, you know, look, a boring draft is a good draft. I keep telling people that. You know, how many times have you seen people flip out about offensive linemen or defensive linemen being picked, especially guys that play in the interior of the line where most people, most analysts, I can't tell you the particulars of why one guard is better than another guard. That's why I love doing these shows and having a lineman with me. You know, that's why Gojo Michael Oak Jr. has been so important to our draft content because he studies these linemen left and right. But for most of us, when you see somebody taken in the first round that's a lineman, you're just sort of shrugging your shoulders and saying, okay, cool, I guess. I mean, we don't really seem to know. So a boring draft is a good draft. That's all I'm saying. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. We'll get more of your take on how you guys are experiencing the draft. 888-729-3776. You can also tweet me at Jason Fitz. Coming up, Nick Saban joined First Take this morning. Hear what he had to say about the upcoming college football season. That's next. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and of course ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. I'm Jason Fitz. If you missed the second hour of today's show, don't worry. You can go check it out. It's on demand. First Take, your take podcast brought to you by Capital One. With Capital One, you can open a new checkings or savings account with no fees or minimums. Welcome to banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Approval required. Capital One, N.A., member FDIC. So, how are you guys going to experience the NFL draft? What's it going to be like? We'll take some of your take in just a second. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. How are you going to watch the draft? You can also tweet me at Jason Fitz. What are you going to be doing? How are you going to be celebrating in isolation for your favorite team? We'll get to that in just a second. But big news today in First Take. Nick Saban came on. He was interviewed by Stephen A. and talked about the plan for people to get back to normal and what his thoughts would be in playing football this fall. This is what Nick Saban had to say with Stephen A. today on First Take.
We would never want our players to ever be put in a situation where they're not going to be safe. But I do think, you know, if we come up with some solutions, we'll be able to manage smaller groups. Like, for instance, we could test all of our players and then we could have some protocol for every day that they come in the building as to whether they're healthy or going to infect somebody else. Now, when you're talking about fans, you know, that's probably a more difficult circumstance and situation, you know, to try to control. So we got a lot of smart people out there. They all have, you know, player safety, player well-being. the best interests of the players in mind, just like we do in our program. So we don't want to ever put them in harm's way. But I think, you know, there has to be some plan at some point in time to try to get people back to normal. And I know that's going to be a difficult transition for us, but something that we're all trying to contribute to a safe and healthy way to do that.
My last question to you on this particular matter, what kind of role would you like to make, would you like to have in the decision-making process, not just considering your credentials as a champion, but your intellect, your willingness to speak your mind about a lot of different issues? Obviously, you bring a lot to the table from an ideas perspective. What kind of role would you like to have in the decision-making process and reaching a conclusion to all of this?
Well, I think this has to be a medical decision, you know, relative to the timetable of when we can come back. So I don't really think I'm qualified to make a contribution, you know, to that. But I do think that once we reach that conclusion, that there's a lot of very well experienced and qualified people to determine, all right, what's the best way to manage players back to get them to a point where they're ready to be able to compete, play, or whatever that is. And, you know, the way I've looked at it is, you know, I look at a lot of the NFL pro experience that we've had through the years where we didn't, you know, ever have spring practice or put on pads in the off season or whatever. We had OTA day type of, you know, training in the off season in April and May and mini camps and things like that, that to activate some of those things, if we're able to get back some at some point in time in the summer, probably would be a better way to prepare the players than, you know, making a longer fall camp or, you know, something of that nature. That's the part of it that I think some of the coaches need to have some input on and listen to when the medical folks finally decide this is the way we can go forward.
Great words there from Nick Saban, stressing that the medical decisions need to be made first. Taking some of your take, what's your draft experience going to be like? Al in Pennsylvania. Love it when Al calls. Al, what do you got for your draft experience?
Hey, Jason, thanks for taking my call. Well, I'll probably be doing the same thing for that I've been doing for the last 15 years, sitting here with a bottle of beer and a bottle of Advil. And seems like I get a headache every time I watch the Raiders make their picks. And I'm not a football expert or anything like that. All I want to do is see the Raiders pick the two biggest, meanest, nastiest defensive players in the draft when it's time for them to come and draft, start building their team on defense, because that's what they need more than anything is defense.
Al, thanks for your take on it. I totally agree with you that the Raiders need some help on the defensive side of the football. It's a particularly deep draft. They're at wide receiver. They also need a wide receiver. Be interesting to see where they go. They have 12 and 19 as their current draft picks. Don't sleep on the opportunity for teams to trade down, too. When you're watching the NFL draft this year, two things to keep in mind. One, this is a strange draft. So will we see mid and later round picks be traded out for picks in next year's draft? I wonder how many people are going to turn around and say, you know what, I'll just give this sixth round up so I can find a sixth rounder next year that I can have had better opportunity to prep for. I'm interested to see that, but I'm also interested to see how many of the teams, Raiders included, with multiple picks are actually looking to move down in the NFL draft. It's going to be what we're all watching. Coming up next, the Will Cain Show. Dak to the Dolphins? I think he's probably got a take on this. Stay safe. Thanks for listening to First Take Your Take.